and isotropic constraints our geometry of the universe to be of the FRW form. And so in the simplest case, it's in these quasi-Cartesian coordinates xi, it takes the following form. So you have the maximally symmetric three-space, which can be either a three-sphere or three-hyperboloid or just Euclidean space. However, this maximally symmetric space can be arbitrarily stretched or shrinked by this scale factor A. And so the meaning of these coordinates is that our commoving observers, those who see homogeneous and isotropic universe, t is their proper time. And these coordinates xi, when they are fixed, that tells you where the position of the commoving observer in the universe is. Okay, so this frame is really adapted to these commoving observers. So we have actually three discrete possibilities for our universe. Either it's an open universe, or it's closed universe, or it's flat universe. And so we will see that actually most observations indicate that probably we are flat, but we cannot really tell. So I will talk about it briefly today. So all these maximally symmetric spaces will, in the end, and for simplicity, reduce to E3, so to the Euclidean three space. But definitely, homogeneity and isotropy allows all three possibilities. We have also discussed other coordinate systems. So first, you can introduce something like spherical coordinate R, and the metric is written over here. Or you can introduce this weird coordinate chi, and the metric is written here. So as we have seen yesterday, actually, the chi has slightly more familiar representation than or meaning than the coordinate R, because it really tells you the distance on the surface rather than the distance in the embedding diagram. So anyway, finally, we introduced this conformal time eta. And the advantage of introducing that one is that you can just write the scale factor in front of everything. And so you have metric, which is conformal to this metric here, which is nice to work with. And in the case of k equal to 0, this is just Minkowski. So then FRW is just conformal to the Minkowski space. So it's like stretched Minkowski space. Are there any questions to this? Everything is very clear. That's great. Yes?
Is the universe actually isotropic and homogeneous?
On large scales, yes. On small scales, of course, definitely not. And on very large scales, we don't know.
How large?
Huh?
How large scales?
Well, as far as we can tell, yes. So so we observe like 3,000 megaparsecs. That's the observable universe. So now at distances like 100 megaparsecs, it is homogeneous and isotropic and larger. Yeah, so of course, very, very small things, we have huge inhomogeneities, right? But on these large scales, it is. But of course, it's possible that on very, very large scales, it is not, right? That we have some other universe which looks completely different, but it must be on much, much larger scales than this. OK, so now let me discuss one interesting things, and that is the horizons. And I will discuss it very in a pedestrian way, but that's fine. So let us discuss basically the causal structure of FRW space. And so for causal structure, you discuss how null geodesics behave in the space. So consider radial photons. So you know that for radial, well, for photons, ds square has to be equal to 0. And if we have radial ones, then also d omega square is equal to 0. So in other words, if I use this last expression for my FRW spacetime, then the eta is proportional to d chi for these photons. So we have that d eta is to plus minus d chi, depending on whether you are coming in or going out. And by definition of this eta is just dt over a. OK, so this is how radial photons actually move in this thing, and so that's why this conformal time is actually useful, because now everything travels in 45 degrees. Okay, so that's how the radial photons behave. Now I'll use some observational fact or some fact about the universe, which I'll describe later. So observational fact. So we know that the universe is expanding. So A dot is bigger than zero. And we shall also see that actually at a given time, typically the universe is governed by one kind of matter. And so if it's governed by one kind of matter, for example, radiation, or for example, really the normal matter, or the cosmological constant, then we will see very shortly that the scale factor actually behaves like this. So it's given by A today. So this is A at any time. It's given by A today. And then it's simple power in time, where this P is actually constant. P is a constant which is bigger than zero. Okay, so we'll see shortly that this is true, typically. So this is true in a given epoch of matter domination of domination. So whether, for example, the most important content of the universe is radiation, or its matter, or its cosmological constant, or something like that. Okay, so we will use this, and I'm just using this for simplicity, because if you make it more complicated, it doesn't help you. But this is the simplest thing you can do. Also, we will use the fact that the time in this metric simply runs from zero to infinity, where you say that zero corresponds to Big Bang, and infinity is simply infinity. Okay. So let me use this relation to study what happens with, let's say, the Hubble constant, and what happens with the acceleration parameter. So taking this relation here, I can calculate what my A dot and what my A double dot are. So, of course, this means that this is simply proportional to t to power p, right? So now if I calculate A double dot, well, this is just proportional to p times p minus 1 times t p minus 2. Okay, so that's very simple. I just differentiate this relation twice. I can also calculate what my eta is. So eta is just an integral dt over a, which is an integral t minus p dt, which goes like 1 over 1 minus p t to 1 minus p. Okay, so these are the two simple relations I have. And that's all the math we have to do. So now let's look at what's happening with our universe. So we have basically two possibilities. Either the universe, the expansion is actually accelerating or it's decelerating. Okay. So let's split it into these two possibilities. So in the first one, I'll say I have the accelerating universe. Which means that the expansion is actually slowing down. So it's still expanding, but it's expanding more and more slowly. So now if you look at this equation here, so we require that A double dot is smaller than zero. And if you look at this, t is just positive. So now, to make this negative, you have to have p small in between 0 and 1. So p belongs to 0 and 1. If I'm looking here, if that is true, this can be negative. Okay. So now, if p belongs between 0 and 1, well, this is positive. And that guy is t to some positive power. So, and t runs from 0 to infinity, so eta will also run from 0 to infinity. Okay, so from here, eta belongs to 0 and infinity. So now if I want to plot what's happening with our universe in terms of this eta chi diagram for the radial photons, I'm getting a diagram something like this. So I'll have eta. The Big Bang corresponds to eta equal to 0. It's t equal to 0, so eta equal to 0. So eta equal to 0 corresponds to Big Bang. So now we live at some eta now. Eta now, this is us. Okay. And then I plot the trajectory of these radial photons, and it travels under 45 degrees according to that thing. So actually, I plot a light cone here. So let's say we always place ourselves at chi equal to 0. That's the most important point on the sphere, as you remember from yesterday. So, okay. So now you see that actually there is some finite chi. Which is called chi BB. And we can never see anything that happens that happened at chi's much bigger or bigger than this chi BB. Okay? So cannot see. So if something happened here, we simply cannot see because we can only be influenced by whatever is inside this light cone here. So cannot see. Chi bigger than chi BB. And so this thing here, well, there is some horizon beyond which we cannot see, and it's called past particle horizon. So past particle horizon. Of course, in later times, we will be able to see more of the universe. But at a given time, we are just limited by this horizon, and we cannot see beyond that. This is all trivial. Are there any questions to this? Yeah?
Can you clarify again why in these coordinates the light rays are straight lines?
Oh, well, not all of them, but the radial photons. So if you look at this metric here, I'm just using that metric there. So I'm setting the omega square equal to 0. A doesn't play any role, so it's just come from here. OK. So now the other possibility is that we have accelerating universe. So the expansion is actually getting bigger. So A double dot is now bigger than 0. And so if this is to be bigger than 0, p has to be bigger than 1. Okay, so p is bigger than 1. But if p is bigger than 1, this is actually 1 over t to some positive power. Okay, so at t equal to 0, and this thing actually is negative. So now actually eta runs not from 0 to infinity, but from minus infinity to 0. OK, so now eta runs from minus infinity to 0. And this minus infinity corresponds to Big Bang. And 0 corresponds to infinite future. OK, so now the picture looks different. So we have, again, eta here, and this goes to eta minus infinity. And again, we are somewhere here today. So eta now. So happily we live here. So now there will be a future horizon. So again, the light rays actually travel 45 degrees. And so this is the part of the universe which we can influence starting from now. So there is this guy, by infinity, and that determines future horizon. Okay. And so basically, what I'm saying here is that if there are some aliens here, okay, and let's say our civilization was born here at this eta, now or whatever, then these aliens will actually never be influenced by us. They will never know that we existed. So there's this future horizon which we cannot penetrate here. Okay, so it's actually what's happening now, because we have exponential expansion of the universe started recently. So the universe is actually accelerating, and that means that, you know, in the future we will actually be able to influence less and less universe. So we will never really communicate with the galaxies which are beyond the horizon now. Okay, so this is just simple, simple thing. Depending on what a double dot is, we have either that picture or that picture. Okay, other questions? Yes.
Past.
Sorry.
What about the past?
Oh, very good. So in the past, we could see everything because this goes to, so we see the this goes to minus infinity. So in the same way here, in the future we'll be able to influence everybody in the universe.
Can you explain why we have eta from minus infinity to zero, please?
Oh, it just comes from this formula here. Mm-hmm. So you know that t runs from zero to infinity. So, and then p is bigger than one, so this is a negative power, and this is a negative thing. So that's why. It just comes from that equation. Does it answer that question? Maybe. But anyway, so still, yeah, okay. Very good. So now these two possibilities, yeah?
What if we consider p less than zero?
Sorry, what about p?
Less than zero. It would still be accelerating.
P less than zero.
It would be slowing down, but it would be accelerating.
But what I'm using here is that actually p is positive. So you know that's something which comes from the calculation. I cannot really, it's not a parametric solution. I just have to, yeah. So now here comes a very interesting puzzle, which is called the horizon puzzle. And that puzzle was actually back in 70s. 70s. So people then measured the energy density in the universe, and they could observe rho of matter, and they measured rho of radiation, and they didn't know anything about the dark energy, so they only knew about dark matter, normal matter, and radiation. And then you can show that if you only include the matter and the radiation and not dark energy, that actually is very simple to show that a double dot for the universe has to be smaller than zero at all times. In other words, basically, at the Big Bang, the universe started expanding like crazy, but this expansion is slowing down, slowing down, slowing down, if only the matter and radiation exist in the universe. So that's what was measured, and now the question is, if so, we are in this in this picture over here. So let me draw it again. So we have this eta, and then we have this Big Bang, eta Big Bang. And then we also have, we will talk about it later, but we have eta of CMB. This is where the cosmic radiation actually was released from the hot soup of electrons and other stuff. Okay. And so this is eta us, eta now. And so now if you follow these radial photons, this is what we have. And so the radiation was really released here. But if you look at this diagram, then actually whatever was released here could have been influenced only in the causal past of that point. So it could have been influenced only in this light cone here. So this is the events that could actually influence that point of release. And similarly for this guy. Okay. So now you see that if this were true all the time, there couldn't be any contact with whatever was happening here, with whatever was happening there. So what you would expect is that the radiation coming from one direction will be completely different from the radiation coming from another direction, from the other direction. Right? Because there is no reason whatsoever why the physics here and the physics there should be correlated. But the observation tells you, yeah, actually, they have the same temperature, and they have the same temperature up to 10 to minus 5. Okay, so this horizon puzzle is really asking why physics is correlated in these two regions. There's absolutely no physical contact. There is no way these two regions could communicate together. And so there's no reason why that radiation has the same temperature as that. In fact, if you calculate, you know, if you're looking at the sky and asking which regions actually could communicate, then if you just look at the size of the moon, that's precisely look at the one side of the moon and look at the other side of the moon, then this is precisely how big the regions are which could communicate. Anything bigger than that couldn't communicate. It wasn't in contact if you actually make these connections. So if you are looking completely different direction, there couldn't be any contact. And so this is a big puzzle which gave rise to inflation. So it's where the idea of inflation come. So inflation is basically an assumption that at the beginning of the, immediately after the Big Bang, the actual universe expanded like crazy, expanded almost exponentially. And so it's not true that the universe would be decelerating all the time. So this deceleration due to, you know, in the matter and radiation era was preceded by accelerating universe. And so this should solve the puzzle. I will not give you the solution. You will discuss it in your tutorial. So, but you can start thinking about it already now. So how that idea is that after Big Bang, there was a short period of time, when universe expanding like crazy. So it's not true that it was decelerating, it was actually accelerating expansion. Okay, and so this should resolve this puzzle. And as I said, you can start thinking about it already know how it resolves the puzzle.
Are we going to talk about this evidence of inflation in this course, like the homogeneities of CMB are Gaussian and kind of like as expected for inflation?
We will discuss something, not much.
Like,
much more will be discussed in the exploration course.
From ahead and saying, oh, it kind of works if we put it this way.
Yeah, that's the way how the inflation.
We use an initial condition that everything is same temperature. We use this bullshit initial condition that exponential expansion at the beginning, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not the solution.
So we will discuss something. We will discuss, you know, some
okay.
reasons for inflation, but other things will also be provided in the exploration course.
Of course.
Yeah. All right. So are there any questions? No questions. So this is one of the biggest puzzles, this horizon puzzle, and you already know the solution. So now, so far, we just discussed the kinematics of the FRW spacetime. Basically, given the spacetime, what can happen. But now let me discuss really how the scale factor behaves, and so the dynamics. Okay, so the dynamics. So you better be solving now Einstein equations for that given metric, and the Einstein equations should give you, depending on the matter content, how the scale factor behaves. Okay. So now you may be asking, what is the corresponding matter content? So we postulated, or we observed, that our universe is homogeneous and isotropic. So now, which matter content is actually consistent with this? And then you can easily show, I will not show it, but you can read it in one of the, probably Bauman's lectures, that the most general matter content, which is consistent with homogeneity and isotropy, is the perfect fluid energy momentum tensor. Okay, so the most general T mu nu consistent. It's pretty easy to show that, but consistent with homogeneity and isotropy is that of perfect fluid. And so, you know, on these large scales, the matter content has to be of that form. And so T mu nu is just given by P G mu nu plus rho plus P times U mu U nu, where this U mu is the four velocity of the fluid, but we know that the fluid or whatever it's associated with this commoving observer of fluid or commoving observers. And the P is, of course, the pressure. And rho is the density these observers measure. Okay, so if you are commoving the fluid, then this is the pressure you measure, and this is the density you see around yourself. Okay, so this is the most general thing which is consistent with our metric ansatz, with our observation. You would be surprised how many actually, how much matter content is contained in this thing. So you can include scale fields, you can include other things. So, it's quite general ansatz, although it may not seem so. Okay. So we have that. So now, of course, we have to switch on the machinery of general relativity, calculate Christoffel symbols for our metric, calculate Riemann tensor, calculate the Einstein tensor, use the Einstein equations, and equal that to T mu nu. Fortunately, you have done the work if you have taken gravitational work, gravitational physics. So it was your first homework. So that's why. And so then you find out that actually you get only two independent Einstein equations for this thing here, and they can be written, so two independent Einstein equations and in fact, so both of them have like two derivatives of the acceleration parameter, but you can integrate one to get like a first integral of that, and so that you will have one equation which has only a dot in it. So these, actually both of them. So these can be written as following 8 pi. Okay, let me write g newton for this time, g newton over 3, and then the energy density. So I remind you that h is a dot over a, and then minus k over a square. So that's one of the Friedmann equations, one of the independent Einstein equations. And the second one is rho dot equals to minus 3h rho plus p. And so these two equations, both Friedmann equations, are the only two independent Einstein equations you can get with this T mu and that metric over there. And you can check it with your homework whether you got the same result or not. Okay, so this is it. These equations govern half of the cosmology, well, more than that. So you better remember them. I don't, but you should. And if you notice what are the unknowns here, so first it's the scale factor A, that's one unknown. But then it's also the energy density and the pressure. So you have actually three unknowns, but only two equations, which tells you that actually you cannot solve the system unless you specify an extra relation. As you will see in a minute, that extra relation is an equation of state, which you have to assume, and that tells you how actually rho is related. But at this point, we just have these two equations. Let me just introduce one parameter which is sometimes used, which is critical density. And so this is something which depends on time, because h is given by 3h squared of t, 8 pi g newton. So that's simply definition of critical density. And if you look at the first Friedmann equation, then and plug for h squared this rho critical 8 pi g newton, and then put everything on the right hand side. So then you will see that the first Friedmann equation simply writes as k over a squared is 8 pi g newton over 3 rho minus rho critical. So sometimes people write this first Friedmann equation in the following form. And so why is this useful? Is that you immediately see that if rho is bigger than rho critical at any instant of time, then you know whether we live what k is, right? Whether it's positive or negative or zero. Okay, so measuring the density at any instant of time, I can compare that with the critical density, and then I immediately can conclude, are we living in the open or closed or flat universe? Okay, so that's obvious. So now the observation, you might think, oh, that's perfect. Let's measure this density at this point. So observation. Of course, this rho is the total density, right? So it's the density of radiation plus the density of matter plus the density of cosmological constant plus everything. Okay? So observation now, you might think, well, we would know what k is, but this is what we observed. 1 plus minus is this. Okay? So We don't know. That's perfect. So now what we will see actually later on, I'll just say it at this point, and I will not explain it, is that this is true now. So this is the density we observe now, critical density which we can calculate, and so this is the observation. But if this is true, then you can actually show that as you go backwards in time, then rho had to be actually closer to rho critical even more. So this actually gets diluted as the universe expands. So if you go sufficiently in the past, then you would have that actually at the beginning, you had to have rho critical times 1 plus minus 10 to minus 12 or something like that, or even less. So this is, again, a puzzle. Why exactly the universe is created in such a way that the matter content is very, very close to the rho critical and actually had to be very, very fine-tuned close to the Big Bang to rho critical. So why? And if you ask, why, there is another interesting puzzle, which is called flatness puzzle. So now we have the horizon puzzle, but we also have flatness puzzle. So why do we live? Why could he have such, you know, precisely tuned conditions when the universe was created? Why rho was so close to rho critical? And we will see that, again, this puzzle is solved by the idea of inflation. Okay, so that's some encouraging things for inflation. Questions?
Why at the early time the rho goes closer to the constant?
I'll explain it next time, but you can think about it. But basically, you know, rho. Yeah. As you expand the universe, as A is getting bigger, actually, these things will sort of dilute, and they will the dispersion will become smaller and smaller, bigger and bigger. I'll talk about it. Don't worry. So think about it now. Maybe you'll find the answer yourself. But if not, wait 3 lectures, and then I'll explain this. Okay. So now, what I want to discuss is this equation of state, which we need to provide to actually solve these Einstein equations. And so let's talk about cosmic inventory, what's actually in our universe. Cosmic So to solve Friedmann equations need to supplement one more relation, because we have 3 unknowns and only 2 equations. And this is called equation of state. And typically, it's just prescribing how the pressure behaves as a function of density. So now I just reduce my set of unknowns to 2, and then I can solve the Friedmann equations. OK, so this may seem as complicated, and if you know thermodynamics, you know there are various fluctuations of state and whatever, but actually they are R equal to 0. Pressure is always equal to 0 for normal matter on the Earth if you use proper units. So we are talking here about really high pressures, you know, and whatever. So then you okay. So typically the equation of state is very, very simple and can be written as P is equal to W times rho, where W is a constant. Okay. So typically, this is true for most of the matter content in the universe. And as I said, so for example, for normal matter, you know that the normal matter has huge energy density in the units of mc squared is the energy. so huge energy density, but the pressures in these units are very, very small here. So actually for normal matter, it would say that P is equal to zero, rho is huge, so W is actually equal to zero. Okay, and so that's how you deal with all equations of state in normal thermodynamics. It's just zero. Okay, so this is amazing. If you have such a simple equation of state, then actually we can solve the second Friedmann equation. Okay, so now second Friedmann equation is as simple as it can be. So we have rho dot equals to minus 3h, and then rho, and then p is w times rho, which is minus 3h rho 1 plus w. And then plugging for h is a dot over a, so it's minus 3 rho 1 plus w a dot over a. So rho dot over rho minus 3 1 plus w a dot over a. W is a constant, so you can immediately integrate that, and you find that rho is proportional to a times minus 3 1 plus w. Okay. So actually, if w is a constant, then you can immediately solve how is the energy density related to the scale factor, or how the scale factor is related to the energy density. Okay, so this is what we are getting here. So now let's look at the typical matter components. So typical matter content of the universe. And so let me draw a table. We have a component here. And then we have an example, and then we have equation of state, and then we have how the density rho behaves. Okay, so simplest component of the universe is really the matter. So example would be a galaxy. It would be you, also matter. It would be, you know, dust. So dust, but also dark matter. Okay. So they have all the same equation of state, and the equation of state is that pressure is basically zero, density is not. That means that W is equal to zero. So if W is equal to zero, and this is just a to minus 3, and so you see that the energy density dilutes as the universe expands, or matter as a to minus 3. Of course, that makes sense if I have some volume of matter and then this volume expands, but the matter stays the same, yeah, then the density goes like 1 over a cube. Okay, so we have this. So another component is the radiation. So anything relativistic, if you want. So photons, so CMB, if you want, gravitons, perhaps some neutrinos. Some of them actually are massive, but some of them maybe are not. Okay, so that's the examples of radiation. So now if you have taken your electrodynamics course, you know that the pressure caused by photons is actually 1/3 of the energy density. Okay, so here the equation of state is P is 1/3 of the energy density. So W is 1/3. Okay, very good. So now a difficult mass. So 1/3 plus 1, 4/3 divided. So it's -4. So actually, the energy density of radiation is diluting faster than the energy density of matter. It goes like A to minus 4. Okay. So that's why, actually, if A is small, radiation was much more important than at later times. That's why, actually, the era of matter domination was preceded by the era of radiation domination. Okay. We'll talk about that. So now you have cosmological constant. Okay. Example is lambda. Okay. So that has very weird, I'll talk about it in a minute. That's very weird equation of state. The equation of state is actually P is minus rho. Okay, so that's a very weird equation of state. But anyway, W is minus 1. And then if W is minus 1, you get that rho is a constant. Okay, so this looks very crazy, right? So as the universe expands, the energy density due to lambda remains constant. So in some sense, you might be thinking, yes, I'm creating energy because my volume is bigger, but still energy density is the same as it was before. So actually, the mass of that is increasing. So we are indeed creating energy in that sense. But of course, from general relativistic point of view, the conservation of energy is really encoded in the conservation of T mu nu. So lambda mu T mu nu has to be equal to 0. And that's satisfied. Okay. So but what is really important is that cosmological constant does not dilute as you expand the universe. Okay. So finally, you can also include the curvature. So if you are looking at that equation here, so I'm writing a square is e pi g rho minus k over a square. But in principle, you could say that k actually has some energy density as well, and you could include it. You could define rho k, which would be like k over a square, something like that. So you can formally do it. So we have k here. And if you formally do it, then the pressure is given by minus 1/3 rho. So w is minus 1 over 3. And this is what we know, that rho goes like 1 over a square. Okay, so that's formally, you can also include that. And that's basically it. So that's the matter content of the universe. And so because of these various fall-offs, it happens that in different times, different components actually dominate. So at given time, one component particularly dominates. And so these are called various epochs. For example, radiation domination or matter domination, stuff like that. And so that's why it's actually quite simple to deal with these things. Questions? So, let me just make a few remarks, maybe two remarks, on the cosmological constant. So first of all, why it has such a weird equation of state. And it just comes from the fact that you define the corresponding T mu nu for lambda, and then you compare the T mu nu with the T mu nu of perfect fluid. So two remarks. On the cosmological constant. So one of them is that, okay, you can write down the Einstein equations as such. Where lambda is part of the geometry. Okay, so you say left hand side is just geometry, right hand side is the matter content. And so, but cosmologists don't typically do that. They just take this lambda and put it on the right-hand side, and they treat it as a part of matter. Okay. So now, if I put lambda on the right-hand side, then you can define the corresponding energy momentum tensor of lambda, and it's given by minus lambda g mu nu. Right, so that's what I have done, just putting that on the right-hand side. And so now you want to compare this to your energy momentum tensor of the perfect fluid. So you see that I have the g mu nu part, but I have no u mu u nu part. Okay. So what that means is actually this term has to vanish, so rho is equal to minus p. So rho of lambda is minus p of lambda. And then if you look at this and compare whatever, it's just given by a lambda over 8 pi g newton. Okay, so this is the way how you understand cosmological constant as perfect fluid, but it has very weird equation of state where rho is equal to minus p given by lambda. Okay, so that's just the first remark. So really you can think of lambda as perfect fluid with that equation of state. So second remark is much more interesting, is that you know, so what is lambda and where does it come from? And why is its value such that we observed? And so you know that actually from quantum field theory, there are some vacuum fluctuations. And you can calculate what is the energy density of these vacuum fluctuations. And you can compare that with the energy density of the observed lambda. And it almost agrees. So vacuum fluctuations. Should contribute to lambda. I'm not saying that they has to be really all that lambda is, but they definitely contribute to lambda. So now, if you actually open Weinberg, so QFT calculation gives that the corresponding T vacuum fluctuation mu nu is given by minus rho vacuum fluctuation times g mu nu. Okay? So if that is true, it's precisely of that form we have here. And so you expect that these vacuum fluctuations really contribute to the value of lambda. So then you think, well, I have solved it, so I have prediction for lambda. And as I said, they almost agree. So rho vacuum versus rho lambda observed And this is the agreement. So there is this insane number which actually makes it different. So these vacuum fluctuations actually, they have much, much bigger energy density than lambda observed. And so, you know, what the hell is going wrong on, right? So, so you definitely know that vacuum fluctuations contribute, but there must be something which actually contributes in the other way, so that actually everything gets canceled and you get basically zero, right? And so nobody knows what the solution is. So this is called old cosmological constant problem. That problem is really aging now. But all doesn't mean that actually has been solved. It hasn't been solved. It's an open question what's going on with this here. Okay, so if you can solve that, that's a great thing for your PhD.
A new cosmological constant problem?
Yeah, we will discuss that in a few lectures time. So there's actually now many more cosmological constant problems. So this is the old one, probably the most serious one. But there is a new one, but there is also why lambda is really a constant and stuff like that. So there's many more problems with lambda. I'll discuss that. But at this point, let's be happy with the old one. Okay, so till we discuss the new one, please solve this. Okay. How much time I have? Okay, so I have 5 minutes, which should be enough. So we have seen that the second Friedmann equation gives us this beautiful relation between rho and A. And that relation is so beautiful and so simple that it should be derived from some fundamental physics without requiring Einstein equations. And it can be shown that it can actually be derived very easily from a thermodynamic argument. So let me just give you that argument and let me stop there. So you would like to derive, is it still here? This relation here, but not from the Einstein equation, but from some thermodynamics. So we call it physical derivation. Physical derivation of a rho relation. Okay, so let me just mention this. Beautiful argument. So let me consider a piece of FRW spacetime. And this guy has some volume dV, and it stores some energy and some pressure inside. Okay. So now in thermodynamics, everything starts with the first law. So you write dE equals to dQ minus pdV. So as the universe expands, this thing actually is getting bigger. And so the pressure will be changing and whatever, the volume will be changing. Because every piece of the universe is the same, so if you're thinking about the flux of heat going through that boundary, because every piece is the same, there's no flux. So dQ has to be equal to zero, otherwise you don't have thermodynamic thing. Okay. So now let me write this energy in terms of energy density times volume. So I have d times rho v, that's the energy, is equal to zero because we have no flux, minus p. And for p, I'll be using again that equation of state. So I always get it wrong. So p is w times rho. W times rho dV. Okay. So now I use the Leibniz rule. So this is d rho times v plus rho dv. And so you have terms which are proportional to d rho, and you have terms which are proportional to dv, and they are equal. So you can collect everything which is proportional to dv and everything that is proportional to d rho. And what you find is that d rho over rho is minus 1 plus w dv over v. It's surprise, surprise, you can integrate. And so you find that rho is proportional to volume to minus 1 plus w. But the volume of the universe is proportional to a cube, right? So this goes like a to minus 3 1 plus w, which is the same relation as we derived over there, I hope. Okay, so just, you know, using this physical derivation, using the first law of thermodynamics, you can actually also derive this very useful relation between the scale factor and the energy density. And you don't need to use the Friedmann equation. Questions? Okay, and see you tomorrow.